Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's Friday, March 8th, and your Ben Jarofsky Show starts now. It's Friday, the weekend is almost here. And Ben is roaring up and getting ready to talk the top stories of the week with none other than Chicago's own triple threat, actor, comedian, and late night host, Pat Whalen. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader, chicagoreader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, if you want to know where to go, if you want to know what to eat, if you want to know what to drink, this could be a Dr. Seuss book. If you want to know, it's at chicagoreader.com. Just make sure you check that out. Don't forget, if you want more Ben Jarofsky, he's at chicagoreader.com/Jarofsky. And I'll spell it for you. That's J-O-R-A-V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Wall Street Journal Friday, and here's why. Actually, it's over a week. Patrick J. Whalen is waiting. We've crammed our brains with all sorts of news nuggets to discuss from the weeks, including a long-involved, intrepid story about the difference between PR, comms, and news, and press office. But I just got to say, speaking of which, I was hit with a curveball. Instead of my beloved Bright One, home delivered, for some reason, I do not know. You know, every day I get the Sun Times, the actual Sun Times delivered to my house. It makes me unique, and you're welcome. Sometimes I am supporting you. I'm literally holding you up. Anyway, I got the Wall Street Journal. And since then, Patrick, I've been very learned about stocks and stuff. I'm thinking of buying 10 shares of, look to see a stock company, and all I can see is Haley. A story about Nikki Haley. Come on, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go. Oh, how about this? Steve Mnuchin, the former Treasury Secretary, in a bid to shore up confidence in a troubled regional China. All right, enough of that in the Wall Street Journal, but it's in the news.
Democracy lives in print journalism.
Says Patrick Whalen, who subscribes to how many daily newspapers, young man?
Physical?
Yes, like this kind of newspaper. How many?
That would be the Bright One only.
Wow, you get the Bright One? I did not know that.
Every day.
There you go.
And the Trib on Sundays.
Wow, the Trib on Sunday. All right, so before we take the deep dive on the various news items of the week with our dear friend, comedian, impresario, talk show host, commercial actor, Buffalo Bills fan, just adding to the list.
The Hallmark Christmas movie, Ben. Stay tuned for more details.
Actor. Wow. That. Congratulations. That's big time. I will now do my Patrick Whalen imitation. Who what? Oh, wait. Who what? That was from a commercial from last year. So you have some events to announce. Pretty exciting stuff. You got your show back going. I've been urging you to do all this for many, many weeks, and you finally listened. I'm taking full credit for whatever he does, ladies and gentlemen. So promote away. Go ahead, Pat.
Listeners know that all I do is listen to Ben Jarofsky. I've been picking up his scraps for the better part of a decade. Everyone who follows my career closely knows that. Yes, Ben, next week, a big week for Good Evening with Pat Whalen, Chicago's only late night talk show news alternative. What does that mean? We're still working out what the details are exactly. But the details I have for you is this coming Monday, March 11th, I'll be at G-Man Tavern in Wrigleyville, right across from Wrigley Field if they can keep it open. You know, they're asking for 30 mil for security. So the place could get overrun, you know, with bandits. I don't know. Before then, but G-Man Tavern will be open at 7 o'clock on Monday, March 11th. And I will have Maggie Winters of HBO's, The Righteous Gemstones and, Ronnie Malley, great local musician born and raised in Chicago, in an interview with Chase Raywinkle, comptroller for the city of Chicago. Don't you know, this guy knows numbers. He knows math. He knows financials. He's a great numbers. Great guy. Really looking forward to it. And then on Friday, I have another show, which is going to be at the Humboldt Jungle in Naperville. No, I'm kidding. It's in Humboldt Park. And the lineup there is equally, if not exceedingly awesome. A comedic guest, Dia Basrai, and a musical guest, Wyatt Waddell, old friend of the show. And an interview with Emma Tai, formerly of United Working Families and Brandon Johnson's campaign. And now of Bring Chicago Home. So I'm hoping between the two of them, I can parse out exactly the, you know, the truth from fiction in this Bring Chicago Home ordinance. My first question, we need to bring Chicago home, right? So where has it been?
Great question. I have often wondered about that as I'm walking. Like, whose idea was it? Bring Chicago home. This entire referendum, the notion of raising money to fund affordable housing by raising the tax on most expensive real estate transactions in the city. So bring Chicago home. How does that connect? It's, I don't know, man. It's like a Dylan song. You know, sometimes the title is not immediately obvious. The subject of the song is not immediately obvious. I once got a complaint from not really a complaint, but a confused question from one of my dear guests, Peter Cunningham. I don't know if has PC ever been on your show?
He has not, but I actually had his daughter on as a musical guest.
Right. The whole Cunningham family is very talented musically.
Very talented.
PC. PC is the only centrist Democrat in the city of Chicago who can play the guitar. So PC comes on the show and he plays the role of a centrist. And it's a role he's very good at because he is a centrist. And one day I put a title, the caption. I forget what the caption was. I think it was Captive City. I think that anyway, I put that caption on. He goes, "What does the title mean?" And I'm like, "That's like asking Dylan, like, what does Positively 4th Street mean, man?
What does Van Gogh's Starry Night mean?"
Yeah. Wait, there's stars in the night. Even I know that. The night has stars. Okay. Anyway. Yeah, I'll tell you what, to have a controller on. They would. I don't think you would ever have a finance person from the mayor's come on my show because my utter obsession is municipal financing, the TIF program, tax increment financing. And there's so much deception baked into the presentation to the public of the TIF program that they can't truthfully discuss it with me. Do you follow me, Pat? Because I'll immediately go to the part where they like are deceiving the public. And every comptroller or financial person knows they're deceiving the public. Do you get what I'm saying? So it's like they don't want to acknowledge that they're deceiving the public. So it's like the one thing I'm really good at. I've studied it. I've like know it. I've aced it. And there's no one to talk to about it because the only other people who know this stuff, Patrick J, don't want to talk about it because it would reveal the inner secrets of the government.
Once I get my podcast off the ground, I would have you on to talk about it. Can we make a deal right here on the air?
Oh, come on, man. Talk about it obsessively around the clock. It's the show will end and I'll still be talking. But wait a minute, Patrick. I have one more thought.
Anyway, duck and dodge, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it. You didn't answer the question.
Oh, wait. Let me rewind. Yes. I did answer the question. I said, yes, I'll come on, and then I'll still be talking about it
I'm sorry, Chris, you can play back the clip, but I believe what you said, Ben, was, oh, I could talk about it all day.
Okay, yes. All right, fair enough. That is a Pritzkerian duck and dodge.
I've been trained by the best, Ben. It's your own damn fault.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's good. I actually wasn't a duck and dodge. That was so excited to talk about it that you didn't answer the first question. That is a whole different animal. Oh my God, yes. But you forget to say the yes part.
That's why I baited you with the duck and dodge line, because I knew you were a yes.
Yes. Talk tips anywhere, any place, anytime with anyone. All right. So yes, and I would Emma Tai, by total coincidence, reached out to me out of nowhere with a text today. Emma Tai is the genius in the back rooms of the Johnson administration, saying you got to do more about bringing home Chicago, or is it bring Chicago home? God, the dyslexia kicks in. And I said, okay, it's kind of been on hold as a item to discuss because a judge kicked it off the ballot. And one of the things that happened this week is that the appellate court put it back on the ballot. So follow the bouncing ball, ladies and gentlemen. It was a proposal that would, as I said, raise the rate, the tax rate on the sale of property over $1 million in the city of Chicago to create a fund that would directly support affordable housing, which the city obviously needs a lot of. And then it would lower the rate on the sale of homes that are less than $1 million. So it would give people an incentive to vote for it, even if they don't care about affordable housing. So it's a great idea. It's called progressivity in taxes. And as such, the people who represent the industry that's going to the real estate industry, they do not want a tax on the sale of a higher end property. And they really do not want a program that's financing affordable housing. So they have to figure out a way to convince the larger public that this proposal that will lower their taxes will actually be bad for them. Okay. So one more time, Patrick J, it's going to lower your taxes if you sell your property, but we're going to convince you that it's actually bad for you. And you know, Pat, I, at the risk of alienating all my friends in the lefty circles, I do not hold the electorate in as high esteem as my friends of the leftist persuasion. This is a difference I've had with them. I'd love for you to weigh in on this. They hold the people in a very high esteem. Ben, you're cynical. You're jaded. The people are wise. The people are smart. They understand the issues of the day. They're compassionate. Like in the eyes of lefties, the people of Chicago are like characters in a John Steinbeck novel. They're good people of the earth. That's how the lefties view them, man. They're good people, Ben. Okay. I'm like, look at what these good people have elected year after year. Donnie Trump, Richard M. Daley, Rahm Emanuel. What gives you confidence in the goodness of the people, Ben? You're so jaded and cynical. You have a drinking problem. I don't really have a drinking problem, but that's kind of like what's next. So, Patrick, I'll put you in the hot seat. Watch this duck and a dodger, ladies and gentlemen. Who do you agree with, me or the lefties? I believe the great public is prejudiced, bias, and all the bad things that are the officials they elect are, okay? Or do you agree the lefties who say they're good, saintly people who can always be counted on doing the right thing? Go.
So on one side of this answer, you could say it is a duck and dodge because I don't really agree with the premise of the question, because you've given me a light switch. You've given me on or off, yes or no, true or false, black or white. We all know anyone who doesn't want to answer a question is going to point that out right away. But if the question is, do we think that smart enough means tapped in to the political niceties, to the details of every issue, to the processes of government or even elections? No. Joe Blow, Chicagoan, is not tapped in to these processes, to these details, to the intricacies of ballot measures, of the way elections work, of how courts should weigh in on referendums, et cetera. That's not the thing. So what it comes down to is marketing. If you have more money for more mailers and you can hit people over the head with a message, because every good marketer knows you got to tell someone seven times before they even realize you're talking to them, let alone trying to get something through their head. That's one thing. The other part is something that you talk about all the time, which is the internet has completely disrupted the ability of the way our brains work. We are simply not wired to take in as much information as we get every day anymore. I think about the way the world was when my grandmother was born and the way the world is with my grandmother now. And the changes that we have seen in the way, in the places, the number of places, the type of information, there's 31 flavors out there. Everyone has their own thing that they can latch onto. And if it makes you feel better after a long day of work because of shrinkflation and wage theft and all these other things that keep you busy and up at night trying to just stay afloat, then you don't have time or energy for the niceties of learning all these things. And then, you know, you could talk about education and things of that nature. But in terms of are people smart enough to understand that power and society and civilization is a fairly, it's tenuous at times, isn't it? I mean, we're staring down the barrel of the first war in Europe since World War II. We're staring down the barrel of a climate disaster situation. People know that power is important and who you give it to is also important. And so when you say, why is, you know, workaday lunch pail Joe deciding to go with Rahm Emanuel? Well, the guy's connected in Congress. He's connected in the White House. He's going to make sure the ship doesn't sink. He's going to make sure the plane doesn't crash. And that's all I want. So that's all they're willing to buy into. But why? Because they don't think the change is possible. And that just, and now we're just in a big circle. You know, you really pulled my string on that one. I had three cups of coffee today, by the way.
Wait, so time out. So you think that the general public is as jaded as I am? Like, they don't think it's possible to do good. So I'm not going to vote for good.
I think on average, change is risky. Don't rock the boat. And if you can't see a path to achieving change successfully, change is great. I always say I love ideas. Ideas are great. Yeah. How are you going to get there? That's what people want to know. And they want to be convinced of it. In that way, I think they are smart. I think they are inherently intelligent. And they got a good bullshit meter, I think, is what we're really saying.
Yeah. I guess they... I believe it's not so much smartness or intelligence, because I believe people have the capacity to understand all the issues we're talking about. I do believe they have the capacity to do that. I agree with you to a large degree. People are distracted. We're being overwhelmed by all kinds of things. And then we are distracted. As I related to you as in a confessional moment before we went on the show, I spend an embarrassingly large amount of time on Instagram following comedians yesterday.
Hey, any millennials listening, the embarrassing amount of time you're talking about is 15 minutes a day, which I would say is in the lower 5 percentile of the average Instagram user, but please continue.
It may be actually, I may have undercut. It could be 15 minute installments twice or three times a day, be it as it may.
Goodness gracious. Saints preserve us.
Like last night, about 2 a.m, embarrassing moment. I was watching old Rodney Dangerfield clips on Instagram. That man is so funny. And I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, it's what I need to get through these trying times. Johnny, when he's on the Johnny Carson show. Yes.
That's what we're saying. That, you know, these platforms soothe you. And okay. Then so that's why I do my show. I try to combine entertainment with actually learning something. And I want to have Emma on because I don't know which end is up. There's 18 arguments out there about this.
About which? Bring Chicago home?
Bring Chicago home.
So I believe that the public is, if you sit them down and you go over it and you analyze it, it could be like me with algebra. I finally figured it out and I was able to pass. Okay. And it was one of the great achievements in my life. I talk about it all the time. I passed algebra. All right. Very proud of that. And so if I could pass algebra, then the public in Chicago can figure out whether bringing Chicago home is in their best interests or not. All right. The problem is, in my humble opinion, that the public in Chicago and outside of Chicago are biased. They're biased by prejudice and hate. So that colors how they analyze something. They're no longer objective. And so all you have to do is trigger those biases and you can get them to act in a certain way that's probably not rational or logical. And we have seen that with the issue of migrants. Listen, Wall Street Journal, here it is. Okay. Wall Street Journal. I'm showing Pat the Wall Street Journal. Article after article in the business sections of the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the conventional mainstream business newspapers in this country pointing out how immigration is a benefit to the economy. How in state after state, there is a need for workers and they fortify the local economies. And these are like articles filled with statistics that support their point of view and a wide array of economists who are both conservative and liberals. And yet, boil that down to a front page story about someone in McKinley Park. Don't bring them in my neighborhood. I'm like, wait, I'm sorry, Mr. Jones in McKinley Park. Did you not read the article in the Wall Street Journal, in the New York Times that says immigration is actually a good thing for Chicago? Wait a minute. Aren't you yourself the son of an immigrant who just came to this country a year, 10 years ago or what have you? Don't bring them. So, Patrick, that's why I'm saying it's hard for me to see the good in people that some of my beloved lefties see, because I see so much hate coming out of their mouths. Your thoughts?
I liken it to a conversation. I'll politely call it a conversation I had with my wife last night. We're watching the news hour, and they're talking about the fires at the Texas Panhandle. Biggest wildfire, I think, in U.S. history. Massive amounts of damage. Who was coming in to help people? Was it the National Guard? Was it some sort of climate evangelical, scientist group that was helping people rebuild or relocate or get water or food to where they needed? It was a church. Because who is well-funded in the Texas Panhandle? Their tax dollars are not going toward a fire department or some sort of FEMA equivalent of someone swooping in and helping people. The most well-funded organization in that area is a church, and the church is doing good work. They're coming in and they are helping people. But on the side, they're going, "You believe in Jesus, right?" No one in the Texas Panhandle is going to be like, "No, I am a raving atheist. Get out of here." But the point is, it comes down to where people put their money and what they can be convinced of. And I was listening to someone recently that was saying it's not a migrant crisis, it's a migrant opportunity. I can't remember. Ben, do you know who that? I can't recall. Oh, he's pointing at himself, Lister.
Yeah, that's my vain effort. All right, that'll move into our next topic of conversation, communications from the mayor's office and how you bring the public along. So anyway, was I thinking? Oh, yes. So all my efforts have been trying to get the media and the press office and the aldermen and the downtown business community and the editorial writers and the columnists and just Joe Blow in the street to change their communication strategy when it comes to the migrants. And instead of calling it a crisis, calling it an opportunity based on what I read in the New York Times business section and the Wall Street Journal business section. Okay. The smartest economists in America call it an opportunity. Why can't we call it an opportunity? And I have failed. I have failed miserably, Patrick J. They all call it a crisis. No matter how many times I implore the people of Chicago, think of it as opportunity. We've lost 100,000 people, even more, in our city over the last 20 years or so. These are people who will move to Chicago and get jobs and pay taxes. Think of it as like a million bear stadiums, only people, not bear stadiums. The same arguments you use to justify subsidizing a bear stadium and a Sox stadium. Think of it as justifying the rebirth of neighborhoods that have been ignored. I have failed, Patrick. I have failed. No matter how much I say it, the public goes, "It's a crisis. How are we going to pay for it?" And then they cut to some lady in McKinley Park screaming at an older woman, "Get them out of my neighborhood." So now I hear that Brandon Johnson is switching communication chiefs. He's bringing on a new guy from John Fetterman. Will that change? Will suddenly the mayor's office beam out more positive rays of thought that will get people in Chicago to drop their biases and hatreds.
Oh, yes. I see the world as it should be.
Will it change, Patrick, or are we just going to be more the same? The floor is yours.
Ah, man, there's so many different ways to take this. First of all, the definition of crisis is a time of intense difficulty, trouble, or danger. So that's just one way to look at it. Why does Donald Trump spend so much time trying to craft these phrases? And why does he workshop these wordings in rallies that he has almost every week all throughout the country with different audiences? It's because he knows that messaging is the way to people's hearts, not their brains, their hearts. Because you can know something, but do you know something? And knowing something, I pointed at my head and my heart, folks. No, this is radio. Knowing something is different than knowing something, or perhaps feeling something, right?
So what's it? You looked up the definition of crisis. What's the definition of opportunity? Pause while he's.
I'm not going to say, "Hey, what's her name?" because it'll set my phone up. A set of the definition of opportunity is a set of circumstances that makes it possible to do something.
Yeah, do something like create jobs, create or, taxes. Yes.
You want to know the alternate definition, Ben? You'll love this. A chance for employment or promotion.
What? His name, Joe Calvello. Are you listening? This is the new spin meister for Brandon Johnson brought in. He was working for Senator John Fetterman of Pennsylvania. Before that, he worked for Bernie. So, hey, must be good if you work for Bernie, the great Bernie Sanders, who's actually pretty good at communications himself, I might add. All right, he's now being called, he will be the chief, I'm reading this, the chief strategy officer, and our dear friend Ronnie Reese will now, who had been the press secretary, becomes the communications director. So I'll read to you how Cranes views this. I'll tell you right now. Crane Chicago Business has been pretty consistent in criticizing the press operations of the mayor. So they say Joe Calvello will soon take the helm as Johnson's chief strategy officer. Calvello recently worked as Fetterman's director of communications in the Senate office. The mayor's office also announced the promotion of Ronnie Reese from press secretary to communications director. Like Johnson, Reese traces his roots back to the Chicago Teachers Union, where he worked as digital director and deputy press secretary. He headed Johnson's communications team during the 2023 mayoral run and has served as press secretary since Inauguration Day. Ronnie has been an effective spokesperson and a trusted communications advisor for this administration, Brandon Johnson said in a written statement, and I look forward to continuing our work to ensure that the people of Chicago understand our priorities. Joe is from Chicago, is essentially what it said. Joe is a Chicago area native. That's what I wanted. I wanted to read Chicago area native. I guess the whole issue is he from Chicago? Oh, Chicago area native. So anyway, and the lead of the story is that there been chaos and confusion in the press office. And here's the lead. Mayor Brandon Johnson has poached the communications director of Pennsylvania, Senator John Fetterman, indicating the administration is taking steps to right the ship of a previously rudderless press office. Man, that's kind of hard. Rudderless? That means they're just like floating around in the ocean with no rhyme or reason? It's just like a ship that's... I'm actually reading a novel about this right now, Pat. A ship where the crew is gone. It's just like going from side to side. The waves are just taking it absolutely in any direction at all. Is that how you would describe... the communications office of Brandon Johnson, that it's like a ship on the waves, just going from side to side without any rhyme or reason?
I wouldn't. This is a relatively controversial take, but, on a personal level, I decided long ago that, criticizing people of color in arenas that are traditionally controlled or personnelled by white people historically, typically, nationally, systemically. You simply can't criticize their experience, their decisions, their vision. We as white guys can't understand what that's like. And if you can't understand what it's like, you can't see a vision of where they want to get to. So one way to look at it, it's like as a reporter, I understand that reporters, their job is to talk to these types of people and get them to answer questions. But if these people are smart enough to get elected, are they dumb enough to just say, I'm not going to talk to reporters and let the narrative go where it will? Because this is a traditional way to look at it. And I understand the perspective that if you aren't messaging, which is what comms does, press is sending the press a press release. I'm going to be here today. We're giving this much money to this. You know, we're cutting a ribbon over here. And then they type that up and it's press. Mm-hmm. Comms is messaging. And tradition and experience in political and government arenas will tell you that if you're not messaging, your opponents will message for you. So if you clam up, the guy who doesn't like the decisions that you're making is going to craft a narrative around your actions, and your lack of crafted narrative is going to serve your opponent because they now control the conversation. So one way to look at it is that, yeah, they don't care, or they don't want to talk to reporters, or they would like to be clandestine and just not tell anyone what they're thinking or doing. Another way to look at it is that they wanted to make the right hire. And this Joe guy got gym shorts in the United States Senate, okay? And if Fetterman has shown us anything in the last few months, he may not be the guy that Pennsylvania voted for. So an effective narrative was achieved by this Joe guy. Marketing, right? What were we talking about before? You can either explain to people the details, the niceties, the intricacies, the procedures of how things are done and why each decision is made, which will slow you down considerably. Or you can just act and do it. And, you know, people's reactions are going to be their reactions. So I just find it hard to believe that the Johnson camp is smart enough to win an election against someone like Paul Vallis, who, man, that was a squeaker. People forget. And then get to press. We don't have to talk to reporters. We just don't have to. It doesn't make any sense to me. So does that answer your question?
All right. Yes, that sets it up this way. As I see it, there are two essential functions of a press operation. One is what you're getting at, which I would label propaganda. And the other is more basic, and that's just public information. So, for instance, to bring together the first topic of the conversation with this one, right now, Mayor Johnson, his administration is championing, and haven't done it in a while, a program that will follow me in this, folks, because I know I'm going to lose a lot of you, would retire TIF districts and use the property taxes that would otherwise go into a TIF bank account to fund affordable housing. And they leaked it to Cranes. And then they leaked it to the Sun-Times. So they effectively got their message out. And then they somehow or other, I think they leaked it to BEZ. And so they got the notion that they were going to have this transformation. What they didn't do is specify in any way the TIF districts that they would be eliminating. Now, I could speculate all day why they didn't specify which TIF districts they were going to eliminate. My first theory is that if they did that, it would probably spark a fight from aldermen who don't want to lose those TIF districts if the TIF district is in their ward. So this is a very raw idea, effectively, that they were trotting out to the public to see how it would fly. And of course, the public who has been misinformed all these years about TIF programs has no clue as to how to react because they don't understand it. And I don't blame them for not understanding because the city has consistently lied about what the TIF program is. So what's absolutely fundamental, if you're going to understand what the Johnson administration is proposing to do, is to get those TIF districts that they're going to close, which they haven't revealed yet. Okay? So that's basic raw public information. Patrick Whalen wants to do a show about city finances. You call a press officer in the planning department. Let's say his name is Billy Bob. And you say, Billy Bob, what specific TIF districts are you going to close? And Billy Bob says, oh, that's public information. You should know that. I will now email you the districts. You won't get that. That essential public information, you won't get. At best, you'll get a request to send in a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, for something that should be on the website right now. So, but they will have somebody in place to send a broader propaganda message that this is all a part of the mayor's effort to achieve his goals of affordable housing, which he could abandon at any minute, by the way, if he needs those TIF districts to fund a Bear Stadium or a White Sox Park. Do you follow what I just told you? So there's a difference between propaganda and public information. We have lost that element of the press office that provides public information. It's been going downhill since Daley was elected in 1989, and it didn't exist under Lori Lightfoot, and it didn't exist under Rahm, and I don't see it existing now. You ask any reporter in the city of Chicago, go get some basic information and see what happens. You'll be asked, either they won't respond or they'll ask you to file a FOIA request. That's different, young Patrick, than beaming out this general theme that the mayor cares about us and he loves us and he's looking out for us, which is propaganda. Your thoughts?
Yeah, the articles in the last 2 days about FOIA requests, for all intents and purposes, being ignored. The narrative of what it takes to get into City Hall into a press conference like the one they did about the DNC yesterday about security. Apparently, a lot of folks at the Reader had difficulty getting past police and into this other area. The public gallery, clearing council chambers, you know, I would tie the clearing of council chambers to the tone and tenor of the discourse in the city, on the internet, in this country, on this planet. And, you know, when Daley does it, when Rahm does it, when Lori does it, when Brandon does it, it's not good when you keep the press out and hamper their ability to make the public informed, which leads back to it's too difficult to be informed. So people would rather just take an easy narrative that makes them feel better.
Yeah.
It's all one thing. And it makes me think of the messaging that has gotten out. I think it was Stacey Davis Gates who said, first we get the money. And that, to me, is kind of indicative of this process. Now, I want to be careful because, I mean, Stacey's not living in Brandon's head pulling levers and, like, making him walk, you know, and telling him, typing him what to say. But I think there is a larger idea here that bypassing the ability to have your narrative completely fouled up and then bog you down in defending that narrative is more costly to your legacy than it is in the short term, where people are saying y'all are clamming up. And good for reporters for saying that this is bad, because that's their fucking job.
Yeah.
Their job is to hit up the people in power and ask for answers. And if they're not getting any, they should hit the big red buzzer. But I saw a tweet today from Kyle Hillman, who's a guy I met a couple weeks ago. And he said this. So what's your reaction to this, Ben? If you're an Illinois reporter who didn't ask Michael Sachs if he was really pulling the puppet strings after every ROM decision, but are asking the CTU president, who represents thousands of people, if she's controlling the mayor, ask yourself why. Is that a good question?
Yeah, that's that sounds like a segment of the Ben Jarofsky show. Yeah. Yeah, this is one of my favorite. Okay, now we're kind of moved into a different area, a bias in political coverage. And so Stacey Davis Gates was sort of getting into this subject at her City Club speech. And so absolutely, this gentleman, Kyle, is hitting the nail on the head. There is a bias when it comes to the coverage, particularly in the mainstream media, Cranes, Tribune, Sun-Times. The bias is that money that goes to poor people is a waste. Money that goes to rich people is economic development. That's the bias. And the bias, there's another bias about a base. I've talked about this and written about it. So there's a bias that Brandon Johnson has a base. His base is the Chicago Teachers Union. They control him. They're his. He is their puppet. He's controlled by like a leftist group of operatives. That's the bias. So they never have the bias. Well, what about Rahm's base? I don't recall the Sun-Times or Tribune saying Rahm is doing this to take care of his base or Cranes. I never heard them say that. Daily. Do you ever hear Daily? Like, I posed in an article I wrote about this and in the mic, when Daily sold the parking meters, did the Cranes or the Sun-Times or Tribune say he sold the parking meters to feed his base? It was a pure privatization scheme. There's a whole sector of the downtown business community that worships privatization schemes because it could make them richer. So yeah, you could say he was feeding his base, but they never said it. Do you follow me? So that's a bias right there in and of itself. And so, yeah, the press corps becomes more ferocious in pointing out that there are interest groups around the city that want Brandon Johnson to do something, but they ignore the interest groups that wanted Mayor Daley and Mayor Rahm and Mayor Lightfoot to do something. Those aren't bases. Those City of Chicago. It's good for everyone. Friends, go read the news coverage of the proposed Bears Stadium, not the sports coverage. It'll be markedly different. Just go to read the coverage that you're getting from the mainstreams. It's always presented as good for the city as a whole. It's not like, oh my God, this is going to enrich the hell out of this one developer who can't figure out how to develop his vacant lot, even with the TIF money dedicated for it. Okay? It'll never say, by the way, this developer has hired this PR flack who used to work for Mayor Daley, or this PR flack who used to work for Mayor Rahm. But you better be damn sure they're going to connect all the dots when it comes to the lefties. Well, Ronnie Reese used to work for the CTU. Brandon Johnson was a paid operative of the CTU. Stacey Davis Gates, oh, she runs the city. Beware, be scared. So that old boy Kyle was right on target. In my humble opinion, with his tweet. So I guess there was something good on Twitter yesterday. That little tweet. But that's my response. You asked me and that's my response. Yeah, obviously, there is a bias. That's what I started off by saying, Pat. We all have biases. It's hard to...
No, I don't. First of all, no, I do not. Thank you very much.
That's hilarious, man.
I've...
Oh, God.
I won't go down, you know, because you say every mayor has had biases. I mean, I'm always drawn to that Daley, the senior, the elder, his entire, you know, rise to power was built on patronage, which is the literal manifestation of what you're talking about. Yeah. And I've done that before, but it on this show, so I won't do it again. But something came up last week. Did you see the Church of Scientology held a big hullabaloo, I think, over the weekend on Saturday downtown?
Yes.
And many lefties were very upset that they just shut down, I think, Clark Street, right downtown. And they said, you can't do this. And I tweeted something out and said, yes, you can. All you have to do is pay all LAZ's fines and you own the street.
Yeah.
And that's a done deal. Yeah. And that's how it is. But I often wonder, Ben, how transparent the process was of Daley the Elder making the decision to build highways through black and brown neighborhoods, and how transparent the process would have been if he had decided to build, you know, a highway through a white neighborhood.
Well, first of all, the concept of transparency in the days of Daley the One in 56 is laughable. The concept of transparency is a laughable concept anyway. I don't know anybody who really believes in transparency, but it's one of these phrases they throw out all the time. It's like accepted. It's like liberals calling themselves progressives now. I think this sounds good if I call myself a progressive as opposed to a liberal. So from now on, I am a progressive. And so the notion of transparency, nobody wants the public knowing their business. Every conversation I have with someone, pretty much there's an off the record part of it. Nobody believes in transparency. Please stop using the word transparency. This administration promised to be transparent. Lori Lightfoot promised to be transparent. Rahm Emanuel, which is hilarious, he promised to be transparent. None of them are transparent. I'll repeat what I said. Go find out. Tell me right now what those TIF districts are that Mayor Johnson's proposing to close in order to fund his affordable housing program. You can't find them because he doesn't want you to know. Just like Mayor Rahm didn't even want you to know how TIF worked. Mayor Rahm had this TIF video. It was hilarious. The basic point of the video was, this program is really complicated. It's so complicated, you'll never understand it, so don't even try. That was his instructional video about TIFs. So there is no thing as transparency. It's just like a fraudulent concept, in my humble opinion, Pat. Oh, am I so jaded? And I want transparency. I want to know those TIF districts. But, Pat, it doesn't matter who the mayor is. They don't want me to know. Do you follow what I just said?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're saying if you want transparency, buy some cellophane. I think that in a democracy, which I'm told we're supposed to be on paper, old paper, very old paper, there's a fine line between electing someone to lead and trusting their ability to make decisions off information that the average person doesn't have, and not feeling as though you're a part of that decision-making process or even knowing the factors involved in the decision-making process. I remember a long time ago when I had candidate Pritzker on my show, I came on your show beforehand. And the reason that a lot of people were nervous is because we had just had Bruce Rauner, who ran a campaign on being a businessman and a successful one at that. And he got elected and he shut the door behind him. And he didn't involve anyone in the General Assembly, in other parts of the state. And so people were nervous about that. And I see the reaction to the grocery tax decision as a great example of what we're talking about. Many people are saying, you're not going to tax me? This is fantastic. And these are decisions that need to be made on a broader scale. You look at a the ShotSpotter. Again, everyone's standing around outside going, what the hell is going on? And they're like, we're working on it. We're working on it. And So just bring it back to Stacey. I think her standing at a podium and actually taking questions. Oh man. After the City Club was messaging, was comms, as opposed to press, even though she's answering questions from the press and they're going to take her answers back and make press about it. She's answering questions in a way that is messaging. I'm blurring the line between what I was saying. It's still a theory. I told you this, but like the whole idea is that if they have press before and they have comms now, what's the difference? And I think this Fetterman guy is someone you bring in to say, here's what we're trying to do. And he goes, okay, here's how you talk about that. And the theme of the day is that you need to give it to people in a way that they can understand in a TikTok or less. And that's hard to do with a TIFF program. So Rom said, screw it. And Daly didn't have to message on building a highway through whatever neighborhood, because no one who had anything to say or any stake in the matter would say, oh no, don't do that. Right. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
People didn't have access the way they do now. It's just different. It's different and it's maddening.
Yeah. No, the notion that Daly would have to, justify, and it may, Mayor Daly would have to justify his highway building program is in itself hilarious. He had all the votes he needed to pass it. If it came to any kind of city council vote, the newspapers supported it. So he wasn't going to get any editorial blowback. So yeah, you're absolutely correct. It was a boss system. All right, let's leave Chicago for the moment and close by discussing the topics that you believe. This is a favorite part of when Patrick J. Whelan starts our show. Will be discussed on the Sunday morning talk shows. And again, Pat Whelan watches them, so the rest of us don't have to watch them. He gets up early on Sunday morning and watches ABCs, NBCs, CBS, and there's another one in there too. Oh, the Channel 11. Isn't there one in Channel 11? Margaret Brennan, isn't that, is she on Channel 11? That's your
firing line with Margaret Hoover. And that's, you know, it's your fault, but you've reminded me of the other thing I wanted to say. I'm obsessed with Buckley, and I'm obsessed with the idea of debate. And I've said many times on this show and to anyone who will listen that there's nowhere where people can disagree civilly anymore, because we come from such separate arenas. But the one thing that was missing from what we were saying about messaging and all that is that on Buckley's show, Firing Line, it was a good faith argument. People were meeting with the agenda of I am right based on the data and my experience.
Yeah.
And it's not about being right anymore. It's about winning. And I think we got to look in the mirror on that as a society. But in terms of Sunday shows, yeah. I guess the president gave a speech. I don't really pay attention to that kind of stuff. That's why I don't know.
Will that be the number one topic?
The ripple effects of the speech will be the topics that will dictate the tone and tenor.
What about the Supreme Colorado decision? So the Supremes, the U.S. Supremes, in their infinite wisdom, decided to allow Donald Trump to remain on the ballot, even though he's violating clearly the Constitution as an insurrectionist. So to paraphrase Norm MacDonald, it's okay to be an insurrectionist in the United States. It's such an inside joke. No one will get it except for Dr. D. Do you feel as that has been exhausted by the talking heads of Washington, that they've moved on from that, that the notion that it's okay to be an insurrectionist and still run for president is no longer a relevant matter of topic for conversing? You think it's passed?
It depends on which of the 31 flavors you like best, I think. I think a lot about the difference between curious and inquisitive. You know, curious is, I want to know more about this. You tell me about this. And inquisitive is interrogative, interrogatory. It is asking questions. It is interrogating an idea. It is interacting with an idea. It is searching the depths of an idea, looking at the ripple effects of an idea. And I think that I just always think that the Republicans of Arizona, or was it Colorado? Did the Republicans bring this up? Anyway, whoever started this whole get him off the ballot thing, which I thought was a waste of time from the fucking beginning, pardon me, were Republicans. And I think they did it because they knew it wouldn't hold water and it would be free advertising and marketing and keep his name in the papers, whether he gets tossed off the ballots in whatever state or not. The people who are going to vote for him would vote for him if he stood in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shot someone in the head.
Wait a minute. This is a conspiracy theory that I had never entertained before. I want to make sure I understand the conspiracy theory that just came out of your brain.
There's two ways to look at it.
Go ahead.
One is that people who support Trump knew that the Supreme Court would not overturn this.
Okay.
Or that they wouldn't. It didn't matter because the votes would write them in anyway. The other way to look at it is that the Republican Party said, we got to get this guy out of here, even though a majority of our party supports him.
Yeah.
So both are equally ridiculous in my eye. And I, with Haley in the news, I have been so sick of the weeks and weeks and weeks that people have given to this, not because she doesn't have, you know, some patriotic duty deep seated to try to salvage what's left of the Republican Party. But I mean, talk about a need to look in the mirror. The Republicans need to wake up. You either need to make a new party or move to Canada. You pick.
So are you on the Monroe Anderson side of things that you predict that Donald Trump will lose in November? That's Monroe's prediction, has been forever. Because if you believe that Donald Trump will lose in November, and as J.B. Pritzker has said, who apparently agrees with Monroe, will really Donald Trump's presence at the top of the ticket will damage Republicans up and down the ticket. So he's effectively the best friend Democrats have. I'm paraphrasing what J.B. Pritzker said this week after Colorado, the decision was thrown out. So if you subscribe to that notion, then what you're saying is that it's the kiss of death for the Republican Party to have Donald Trump at its head. Right now, according to the New York Times, Donald Trump is beating Joe Biden in the polls. Donald Trump it looks very strong at this moment. So maybe it's not the kiss of the death for the Republican Party to be headed by Donald Trump. So what do you believe? Do you believe it's the kiss of death for the Republican Party to be headed by Donald Trump? Or do you feel he is going to bring home victory in November?
I think it's the kiss of death for the Republican Party as we know it. I think that a better question to entertain is, will Haley endorse Trump? Because if she does, then her supporters, I don't know, they'll have to make up their own minds. And I look at Dean Phillips. For those of you who are just joining us, Dean Phillips is someone who's been talking smack about Joe Biden from the blue side of the fence for the last 8 months. Wow. Must be nice to be rich. What I'm getting at is this, Ben. I think that the White House and the president believes, and this is a sad state of affairs, I'm not happy about it by any stretch of the imagination, that all of the qualms that folks have with Joe Biden now are going to be in stark contrast to the reality that we're living in come Halloween. Yeah. It's going to be a very scary Halloween. And I want to throw another log on this fire. Trump's out of money, and a dog is meanest when it's backed into a corner. And he is going to pull out. He is going to get it. It's going to get bad.
Yeah,
it's going to get really, really bad. And I think that as it gets worse over the coming months, people will realize that you really don't have a choice. You really don't have a choice. And that's what's sad about it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We will close on that horrific image of Trump.
Come to my show. It's a comedy show.
It's a comedy show.
Yeah.
So one more time, promote your upcoming appearances. Go ahead, Pat.
Monday the 11th, G-Man Tavern with Maggie Winters, Ronnie Malley, and Chase Raywinkle, the city comptroller for Chicago. And then Friday the 15th at Humboldt Jungle with Dia Basrai, Wyatt Waddell, and Emma Tai. All the information around ticketing can be found at Best Evening Ever on Instagram or Twitter. I should probably post it on Facebook, but I probably won't. And you can follow me at the Pat Whalen for more shameless self-promotion.
Very good. His it's Pat Whalen. There's no J, but on our show, he's affectionately known as Patrick J. Whalen. The J stands for Jarofsky, as he pointed out the last time we were on the show. Thank you very much, young man. Have some great shows. Appreciate you coming on my humble little podcast. And also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job, particularly with this troublesome week we have with the computer going in and out and dancing around. He does a remarkable job. Patrick J agrees when I say, hey, Chris, give yourself a raise, take it out petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, you can always stay updated on what Ben Jarofsky's doing. Spend your weekend playing catch up on previous shows, bonus interviews, columns from Ben, all at chicagoreader.com. And don't forget, if you want to find him on Instagram, at Benny J Show. And then if you would, please tell your friends about the show. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow The Ben Jarofsky Show on all your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.